I'm Michael Smith.
And I'm Chuck Osborne.
And welcome to the Iron Capital Podcast,
where we break down investment stuff with anecdotes and stories that non-financial geeks can understand.
Hey, this is Michael.
This is Chuck.
It's Wednesday, March 6, 2024. This is the 10th episode of the Iron Capital Podcast.
Woo!
So let's get to it, Chuck. What is on your mind today?
Evil, Michael. Pure, unadulterated evil.
It wasn't very evil sounding loud. I sound like Count Chocula or something.
So we're revisiting an old newsletter called Indexing is Evil.
We looked this up, right? That was the end of 2010.
It was the fourth quarter of 2010.
It's wild.
Yes, it was.
Well, let's do what I always like to do, which is let's explain a little bit what indexing and passive investment means.
Okay. Well, that's a good question, because the way you've worded that, I don't think they're the same thing. So we'll talk about that. But indexing, which is what most people refer to when they use the term passive, is basically you're buying some kind of fund, either a mutual fund or an ETF, an exchange traded fund, that mimics a market index, the most prevalent of which would be the S&P 500.
Yeah.
But there are many different indices in the markets, and you can index just about any of them.
That's right. So academics say that you can't beat the index. Is that true? Do you think that's true?
No, that is not true. And to be honest with you, that's not what actually academics say.
Actually say, yeah.
Right. What they claim, which is true, is that the average investment manager does not beat the index. In my mind, that's kind of like saying, well, that, you know, we're about to enter March Madness here. The average college basketball coach will never go to the Final Four. I don't have the stats on this, but I would not be surprised if someone told me that the average college basketball coach ends their career with a losing record. There are all kinds of places where average is not very good. And what studies have shown is that the average, you know, investment management is the same thing, and the average is not very good. The average manager does not actually beat the index. Now, that does get translated by popular media and lots of podcasts and financial advisors and all kinds of other folks as saying no manager beats the benchmark, but that is not the case at all.
Well, that also is talking mostly about, even those academic papers are talking about beating the S&P 500, right? I mean, that's not the only benchmark or index.
Correct. Just about all of those studies are based on just the S&P 500, which are the 500 largest companies in the United States. These are, you know, the 500 most popular companies and well-known companies in the world. It is very difficult for a manager who's specifically benchmarked to the S&P 500 to actually beat the S&P 500. And I think the point you're getting to is that is not the case when you start talking about other indices.
No, that's exactly right. Small caps is one of the most egregious examples, if you want to think of it that way. I mean, we looked it up. Over the last 10 years, small cap growth companies, which is a Russell 2000 growth index, 66.85% of managers beat it. So that's above average.
That's two-thirds. Yeah.
20 years is 76.4% beat. Now, there may be some survivorship bias, but still. And the same, that's similar, very similar to small cap value. So in small companies, the average manager beats the index pretty regularly.
Yes. absolutely. And this is also true. We wrote about this a few years ago. It's also true internationally. Pretty much any index not named S&P 500, even the average manager has a good shot of beating it. But that also gets into the other question, is that, you know, Unlike different universities out there and hiring their basketball coaches, we as investors don't have to settle for average.
Yeah.
There's no reason to put your money with an average investment manager, you know. And so, you know, the analogy I would use is, again, stick with basketball, where you take Bill Self, who is the head coach of Kansas University. At one point in Bill Self's career, I think he had more conference titles than he did home losses. He is well above average. He has won two national championships since he has been the coach at Kansas. Now, you know, he is going to be a coach that's going to have a competitive team every single year.
Yep.
And give you a chance of winning championships. And, you know, to continue with that analogy, if in investment management, almost all of us can put our money with Bill Self. We don't have to, you know, you don't have to go to Kansas.
That's right. A good manager can manage for everyone.
That's right. That's
exactly.
Right. So, so there's no reason to settle for it.
Well, why shouldn't, let's talk about more reasons why an investor shouldn't just index and what some of the other downsides to indexing are.
Well, that's a great question. And that's also kind of what spurred this, is that there was a couple of articles that hit my desk on the same day. I always love it when related things hit my desk on the same day. It's like fate talking to us about what we should be talking about.
Yep.
But there was an article in the Wall Street Journal and where they actually interviewed a gentleman, and I'm going to go to the glasses here, Michael, to make sure I get this right. Nikolai Tangen. He is a Norwegian civil servant. He's an investment manager. He runs their sovereign fund, which is actually fueled by oil profits mm-hmm. from the North Sea. Which also has green mandates, by the way, which is kind of the irony there. We could do a podcast on that.
Yeah.
That's for a different day. But they have $1.5 trillion in assets.
So and they're barely getting by, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. And what he says is, like, not everyone can just be passive. You can't, you know, basically free ride on a well-functioning market. Somebody needs to vote. And he's so right. And a lot of it is because I think we forget what the function of the market actually is. You know, the function of the market is to allocate capital across different companies throughout our economy. And the whole idea of capitalism is that capital needs to be free to flow to whatever's doing best at the time,
mm-hmm.
so that we can get new ideas, so that there can continue to be, you know, turnover and who those larger companies are.
Yeah.
And that the old will fade away and the new will come up.
And it fosters economic growth.
Absolutely.
And that benefits everyone.
And it does. It benefits everyone.
Yeah.
However, if we did live in a world, and we're not there yet, but if we lived in a world where every single investor only invested in the index, then that wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Capitalism would literally cease to work. It would be no different than socialism.
Yeah.
In the sense that we're just giving money to the companies that happen to be the largest today.
That's right.
And they're not because they deserve it, but just because that, you know, they are who they are.
Yeah.
And it's just going to stay that way. It's going to be the same 500 companies forever. And that's what would happen if everyone started to index. And, you know, the closer and closer we get to that, you start seeing ramifications
yeah.
Of this. And that was another, MFS just did a white paper.
MFS is an investment manager.
Investment.
Specialized in active
right.
management. We use them in some instances.
Right.
They're good.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, I think they have the first ever mutual fund. They're out of Boston. They're Massachusetts Financial Services Company is what it stands for, in case you want to go for a job interview. And but yeah, they have a white paper entitled Indexing Dilutes Capitalism. And, you know, and that's, and they're making that point, is that, you know, so much of the lack of accountability in corporate America today is because so many investors are indexing and they're not voting with their feet. They're not saying, we don't like what you're doing at, you know, whatever company
it could be,
and saying, we're going to take our money out and we're not going to invest in you anymore because we don't like what you're doing. And people are investing in them simply because they're in the S&P 500, and that kind of gives them, you know, a blank check to then do whatever they want.
Yeah, there's huge societal ramifications there.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So now we aren't there yet, and that's what, you know, some people will argue. They'll argue there will always be people who are going to be active and so forth. However, that is the road we are going down. The more and more people go to passive index investing, the closer we get to a world where our entire system, as you know, it doesn't work.
Well, that's pretty heavy. Let's shift slightly and let's go to what I said in the beginning, and you just made the comment too. Why is indexing not actually passive?
Ah, well, that is an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah.
So. So we have a few statistics. I have one that, you know, that I wrote in 2010 in our newsletter. You go back to the 1980s, and the average holding period for an active manager, because that's all there were.
That's all
back
there were.
Then,
there were no indexes.
The average holding period for a stockholder back then was 2 years. Okay, and I think you researched, if you go way back to the 60s, it was 8 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but even in the 80s, I mean, it was, you're talking about investors holding on to a stock for 2 years on average. At that time, the average, you know, in 2010, that had turned into 2.8 months.
Yeah.
Now, I think there's some data that shows that maybe it's a little bit better than that now. It's about 5 months.
Yeah, but it's hard to capture that data, truthfully.
Right. It is hard to capture that data. But, you know, we've gone from a period of time where people actually own companies for years to where they are owning them for a period of months, if not days, if not nanoseconds in the case of some computer-generated trading.
Algorithmic trading, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what happens is we have become more and more active as, you know, as an investing society, so to speak.
But active in a very different way. I mean, and who is being active is done in a seriously different way.
Right. And so, and this gets to the point where, as we say, that indexing isn't really passive, is that a lot of that active trading is not being done at the stock level.
Yeah.
It's being done at the index level. It is people trading ETFs, to a lesser degree, going, you know, market timing in and out of index funds. Mostly, though, it's going to be ETFs that have allowed traders to trade entire indices just as rapidly as you would trade a stock.
Yeah.
And what also happens is, you know, and we've spoken about this before, there has been a slow evolution, which I believe is in the wrong direction in our industry, where more and more of the kind of the power and the influence in the financial services has gone away from professional money managers, where it used to be, if you go back to the 80s or 90s, and it has gone to the retail financial advisor.
Yep.
And what's happened is that you have now retail and financial advisors who aren't actually trained. And as we mentioned, you know, perhaps the average, you know, investment manager isn't the greatest.
Yep.
But there are above average managers out there.
Yep.
These are people that are, at the very least, are educated and trained on how to actually analyze securities and make investment decisions. What you have is that is being replaced by what are, in essence, sales professionals who are trained on how to sell products to clients. And they are now, very amateurishly trading in and out of these asset classes as a way of adding value
yep.
to their, to their clients. And I put that in quotation marks because, in reality, they are most likely detracting yep. value quite yep. a bit. But they are moving in and out of these index passive products extremely rapidly. And
yep.
I think you looked it up. I think the S&P 500 SPDR has to completely reconstitute itself, every 13 days?
Yeah, the SPY, which is S&P 500 ETF, it yep. trades the total amount of underlying shares of that ETF every 13 days. I mean, that's a wild amount of trading
right.
that occurs in the market. In the largest investment vehicle out there.
Right. And this also gets into one of those things that, this is kind of a theme we're going for here, is you've got things that are good for Wall Street.
Yep.
So you do have a lot of academics who, again, will tell you that the average money manager doesn't beat the index. Okay. So, again, that's kind of like, so what? That's like saying the average student, if we aren't inflating grades and are actually grading by the curve, gets a C.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Average is C, and C is not as good as A or B.
Yeah.
And so so we get that. But the market loves that because now you're putting money into funds that, in the case of the S&P 500, owns 500 stocks.
Yeah. Wall Street loves that.
Yeah.
Wall Street loves it because it creates more trading.
Oh, absolutely.
Instead of trading single stocks, you're trading 500 stocks every time you trade this thing.
You're right.
Yep.
And it's completely having to reconstitute itself yep. in 13 days.
Yeah.
So, that is just an enormous volume of trading activity,
yeah.
which
generates underlying fees.
Just
yeah,
absolutely generating, huge amounts of fees. As opposed to, you go back to the old model where most active, large company investment managers would own maybe 60 companies
yeah.
in their portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And they hold them on average for 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
you own 500 and you hold it on average for 13 days.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you are talking about, an economic boon for Wall Street. And that's why this thing gets pushed.
Yeah.
It gets pushed because you have people that, they benefit from this advice.
Yeah. I want to step back one level back because I think this is a really important thing to bring up. And let's a little bit on this idea that we went from professionals managing money to amateurs managing money
yeah.
with advisors. Let's talk a little bit about one of the biggest pushbacks that happens now from our current celebrity status of Warren Buffett. So Warren Buffett, a lot of times you'll hear him say, I think the average person out there should use indexing. Why does he say that? Let's talk about some reasons why he would say that and
oh, yeah.
also what does he actually do? So
right. And he's not the only one.
Yeah.
Swenson, who we've brought up before.
David Swenson.
David Swenson, who was, fortunately we've lost him, but he was a long-time chief investment officer at Yale for their endowment. He said the same thing. And like Warren Buffett, if you actually looked at what he does,
it's nothing like that.
Nothing like that. And I'll go a step further because I don't mind, and you know this about me, I don't mind being the one guy in the conference who raises his hand, when some index guy is sitting there and going, completely pushing back on them.
I would say I wouldn't say you don't mind. I would say you actually love being that person in my experience.
I do somewhat enjoy it. And so, and here's the thing. Every single person, and I've gotten into conversations with academics, I've gotten conversations with people from the CFA Institute. I mean, lots of very bright people who will get up on a podium and say things like everyone should be indexed, et cetera. Every single one of those conversations, when I get one-on-one with them and we start actually going back and forth, ends this way. And they kind of lean in and they get quiet and go, well, Chuck, of course, that's not what I do with
my
money.
I actually don't do that. Yeah. Yeah.
We just think that's what other people should do.
And why, right? Why is that? Well, what is it a referendum on, do you think? It's not passive versus active.
No. What they're really saying is that you should not be taking advice from the average financial advisor.
Yeah.
There's an idea out there that if you're indexing that you don't really need help because you, and now this isn't the only thing people hire advisors for.
Yeah.
So I don't even think that's a realistic solution. But for people coming from this background, you know, Warren Buffett isn't hiring a financial advisor to figure out what kind of account he should have or, you know, those kinds of things.
Yep.
For folks with that kind of background, I think they believe that the primary job of a financial advisor is to give advice. And I think they look out there and they see that the vast majority of advice they give is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you know what, people would be better off if they just didn't take any advice and just went in an index fund.
Yeah.
And they would.
Yeah, compared to that. Yeah.
But there is, another problem with this, and this will go to something that Warren Buffett's mentor used to say.
Benjamin Graham.
Yeah. Yes. Benjamin Graham, in his one of his favorite quotes. He's got many quotes.
Yeah.
But he liked to say that in reality, getting an adequate rate of return from stocks is not nearly as hard as it seems. Now, getting a superior rate of return is harder than it looks. But getting an adequate rate of return from stocks is easier than it seems. And so part of the pushback I would give to the people that say you have to be in the index, and they will say that because the average manager supposedly underperforms the index, is, how many people have ever come to us and say, well, my goal is just to beat the index? You know, that's not what real people with real investing goals come and say.
Very few people say that. That's not what they're looking for.
What they say is that I want to retire in
I want to fund
X number of years.
Yes.
Right.
I have goals.
And in defense of the financial advisors, is where a lot of the financial advisors actually come into play, as opposed to actually just making investment advice.
Yep. Yep.
They'll do financial planning and they sit there and they say, okay, well, how do we get you from here to there?
Yep.
And, you know, in order to get from here to there, you need to get an 8% return. Well, if you need an 8% return, then you don't need to beat the S&P 500. You need to get an 8% return.
Yeah.
To hit your goal.
That's right.
And that's important because, I mean, why take the risk?
Yeah, that's right. Everyone has their own risk tolerance. Right. And if you have why take that risk?
Yep.
A lot of people don't want it.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So, for lots and lots of reasons, we do not think that that indexing is the wise is the wise choice. The one last thing I will say on this is that there's another issue, and this is another theme we've talked about in terms of people asking the wrong questions. You know, because the other point that some academics will make is this: they will say that yes, the above average managers do beat the benchmarks. Especially true when you get beyond just the S&P 500.
Yeah.
But then they will argue that there's no way to select who's going to be above average, and this is a case where they're asking the wrong question, you know. And so what the academics try to do is they try to actually create some kind of mathematical model that says, well, your return was this in this past time period. And that indicates that you're actually going to outperform the market in the next time period. All right. To me, that is like trying to predict which basketball coach is going to win the national championship, you know, and it's actually the beginning of April now, but, you know, in March Madness.
Yep.
You know, who knows? You know, the odds of predicting that are astronomical. You're going to be wrong almost all the time.
Yep.
It can't be done. However, and we'll go back to our example of Bill Self, or previously, and a lot of these coaches have retired now, but if you had Coach K at Duke, you had, you know, Roy Williams at Carolina, these were coaches that won multiple championships, coaches that consistently, year in and year out, had competitive programs that had a chance to win the championship. Mm-hmm. Can you identify someone like that?
Yeah.
And that is the right question, is can you identify a high-quality, above-average investment manager?
Yeah, talent.
Can you spot it? And we believe you can. Our track record has proven that we can. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then are you automatically going to beat the market the next period? No. But are you going to beat the market probably most of the time, over time? Yes. And that is what we have seen with, with our managers. And, that is the reality. You don't have to settle for index fund returns, which, by the way, never beat the market.
That's right.
And always go down more than the market in a down market and go up less than the market in an up market.
Yeah.
So,
I think that's a good place to stop.
I think it is too.
So, as always, let us know what you think. If you have some ideas, stuff you'd like us to cover, let us know, and we will see you soon.
Iron Capital Advisors is an independent, registered investment advisory firm headquartered in Atlanta with clients nationwide. Learn more about us at ironcapitaladvisors.com. The Iron Capital Podcast is produced by Iron Capital Advisors. Our awesome original theme music was written and performed by Michael Smith and Leah Calvert. This content is for educational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions or advice. Clients and employees of Iron Capital may maintain positions in the securities discussed. Please like and subscribe to the Iron Capital Podcast on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back.